Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
ESNY.
How was the Emerald Isle?
Oh, it was amazing.
It looked like you had a good time.
It's incredible. Like, Dublin is not that, like, great of a place. It's just any other city. So if you plan on going, have you been before?
No. I have not, never.
So if you plan on going, don't spend a lot of time in Dublin. But, like, if you head out west, that's where the real magic is.
Is Dublin just kind of like a rough area, like not a lot to do there, or
no? It's just a city. It's like Philadelphia. It's like Boston.
You've seen one, you've seen them all.
Exactly.
Anyway, hi folks. This is a Bleacher Creatures Yankees podcast. This is episode, what episode number are we at? Yeah, episode 136. Part of Elite Sports NY, XL Media, Crossing Broad, Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. Alec and I are here to do a very brief episode. You know, the Yankees, they're still in the All-Star break, got a doubleheader against Houston tomorrow, countered two rough games against the Reds with two out of three against the Red Sox, which were just a lot of fun to watch. You know, we were kind of raging at the extra innings last Friday, like we're sick of this guy, sick of that guy, and then all of a sudden look what happens.
They heard us complaining.
Yeah, per usual. But we're not here to mull over what should happen in the second half, like what should happen with the trade deadline, although there'll be plenty of talk for that next week. Right now, we talk about the captain. So episode one aired right after the home run derby. Alec, real quick, just what'd you think?
I'm hooked already.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because I feel like it targets successfully two different generations. It targets your generation, where you were you were young at the time when those late 80s struggles were happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, there, because if we're gonna go to 92 when Jeter was drafted, I mean, if I'm really gonna show my age here, I was 6 years old then. But at the same time, I wasn't really following baseball yet.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So pretty much I kind of caught wind of the Yankees. My first Yankee game was Jim Abbott's no hitter, September 93. Kind of caught wind, like how baseball worked and how the season was structured in the strike season 94, during which I became vaguely aware who Derek Jeter was. But then my first season following it start to finish, that was 95.
Okay, gotcha.
So this was really hitting me right when I'm coming of age as a baseball fan.
Right. And so, you know, I was sitting there and one of my dad's favorite players are Don Mattingly. And he's told me several stories about, you know, the dark times, when
Steinbrenner run wild.
Yeah, Steinbrenner was going crazy. So it was really interesting seeing that dynamic on the screen and that whole segment with was it Dave Winfield that
he met Dave Winfield outside Tiger Stadium.
Like that I had no idea ever happened. But then also just like hearing about the contract dispute or the money being withheld, and I think I vaguely knew that Steinbrenner had like a personal investigator on Winfield.
So the story they didn't tell about the money being withheld is that they weren't withholding salary from Winfield. There was a clause in Winfield's contract that the Yankees organization, I think either in Steinbrenner's name or just in the organization's name, had to donate a certain amount per year to Winfield's charity, and they weren't doing that.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I mean, like, I became a Yankee fan you see, I was born in 94, so I think probably my earliest memories are probably around like 98, 99 going to a game. So like Derek Jeter at that point, we like already knew how great he was. But like that build up into the moment he got drafted. And I knew some of his minor league stories from like reading his biography and stuff, but just seeing that kind of bridge the gap between like a generation that's a little bit older than me. And then like also syncing up to the stories that my dad would tell me. And then everything that I know from his career up to this point, I thought was really cool.
I'm real curious to hear your perspective on this. So the meat of the first episode, as we're all well aware by this point, it's not so much about Derek Jeter, the baseball player. It's about Derek Jeter, where he comes from, growing up in Michigan, to a mom from New Jersey whose mother herself was a huge Yankees fan. Mm-hmm. Derek Jeter's born in New Jersey. A lot of people don't realize. But let's talk about him getting drafted in 1992, sixth overall. He's told he's going either first or fifth. You played high school and college ball, and you've mentioned against some guys who did ultimately go pro. So just take us through like that process of, hey, you're an amateur, like as you probably saw this going from high school to college, you're playing real well, and then all of a sudden you go up a level, and it's a rude awakening.
Yeah. I think Derek kind of said it perfectly. And you know, it's such a, you have to learn to deal with the failure for the first time that you probably never dealt with before. And
for what it's worth, failure kind of smacked him in the face with a shovel.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. I was actually interested. And I looked at his numbers. Was it yesterday? Yeah. I think I looked at his first year. It's like, oh man. Oh no, we were talking about a good friend of the podcast, Cam, was talking about like the prospects that Brian Cashman has like held on to and how that's can be regrettable. And I was like, oh, well, I wonder what would happen if like Steinbrenner forced a trade of Jeter after his first, you know, year.
He almost forced a trade. Oh no, that was the Mariano Rivera trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You got to think about it from like that perspective too, where for Derek, you know, he climbs his way up the amateur leaderboards when in high school in Michigan.
Yeah.
Gets drafted sixth overall and is, I forget where he reported to. Did he report to Florida?
He went to Tampa. Then I think it was then Greensboro was the high A team.
Yeah. You know, he's, you know, all in a strange place that he's not used to, where it's hot all the time. He's playing against, you know, kids who are as hungry as he is, who probably resent him a little bit because of his draft pedigree. It's like, yeah, that shit's going to be hard. Like,
is there a lot of jealousy when it comes to draft pedigree?
I think Andy Pettit said it himself I think Andy and Jorge said it in the documentary that they looked at him and were kind of like, all right, like who's this hot shot, you know, first pick? From like my perspective, from the guys I would play against, like no, but that also I wasn't getting drafted, so I wasn't jealous of them. I could just be like, hey, that's cool, that dude got picked up in the first round.
It's strange because like maybe I'm just that naive to how the scene actually works, because like if I'm on a minor league team, yeah, it's competitive, yeah, like drafted or not, I'm looking at someone coming in, oh, first round pick, great, this guy's gonna help us win a few games.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I wonder how many people are just looking at those tours in the minor leagues. It's just like stepping stones. It's like, I don't want, like they might not be as invested at like single A Tampa as like, oh, I wanted the team to be successful here. It's like, no, I need to be successful. I need to prove that I don't belong here. I should be moving up.
Well, not to mention, people don't realize Posada came up as an infielder. So maybe he saw him as some extra competition.
Yeah, that's true.
Even more fascinating though, Alec, and I know you definitely saw this as well, just the process of how the Yankees got into a position to get Derek Jeter. Like Steinbrenner, he's banned for a couple of years. Gene Michael takes over and pretty much resets the front office.
Yeah.
And you got to make the argument, okay, maybe Steinbrenner wouldn't have drafted Derek Jeter. Maybe he would have drafted him and then traded him, like you said earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like a perfect storm, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. I love watching these documentaries, whether it's sports related or history related, and it's like there's just one little thing that could have altered the complete timeline that we know, right? You know, like,
yeah,
if Steinbrenner right. doesn't get suspended, as you just said, or if
if he goes first to the Astros.
Yeah, if he goes first to the Astros, or like, you know,
or fifth to the Reds. I mean, just imagine Derek Jeter in a Reds uniform. Like, they're saying, oh, he's going to succeed Barry Larkin.
Yeah,
Barry Larkin, who succeeded Dave Concepcion, probably one of the greatest defensive shortstops of our time.
Yeah,
or go to the Astros, where he would have had a great second base partner in Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell as his first baseman.
Yeah,
I love the story about how the Astros scout is like, who was it? Hal Newhouser, the
pitcher. Yeah.
So, like, his exact words, Derek Jeter is going to be a centerpiece of championships for years to come. Astros like say, like, okay, great, we're going to draft Phil Nevin, and then the guy just retires.
Well, see, like, I knew that story, but I didn't realize it was Hal Newhouser.
Oh,
so when I was watching, I was like, oh, that was Newhouser. Okay, but yeah, I've heard that story before. Where, yeah.
also, like, I remember, like, just in there listing all the guys who were drafted ahead of him, Jeffrey Hammonds, the longtime Orioles and Brewers outfielder. I remember Jeffrey Hammonds' playing time very specifically. I do not remember that he was drafted out of Stanford.
Yeah, I mean, that was a few years before me.
Check out the big brain on Hammonds. But yeah, it was, on the whole, I'm like, I really enjoyed it. It was kind of my one criticism of the episode is that it's very, very New York specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could show this episode to, let's say, a Cubs fan or any other non-Yankees fan. It's not going to hit the same way as it does for a New Yorker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you compare it to, you know, the Michael Jordan series, yeah, you know, it's Michael Jordan we're talking about, who is one of the greatest of all time. And, you know, there's the argument you can make about Derek Jeter. Was he overrated? Was he properly rated? Was he underrated? And, like, you know, whatever. But I feel like he was such a cultural icon.
Yeah.
Not just in the 90s, but like in the mid 2000s, when everyone started obsessing over his personal life, the fallout with A-Rod, all that stuff.
Those are apparently two separate episodes. One's an A-Rod episode, one's the tabloid episode.
Yeah, yeah. So I just don't understand how, if you're a true baseball fan and not just some casual local supporter, if you actually truly love baseball, like, how do you not watch this? Because in some way, shape, or form, you have an opinion of Derek Jeter.
Yeah, I mean, I remember just because we were visiting my big sister when it aired, and she didn't watch it with me, but we were reminiscing about talking to our old man about defending Derek Jeter back in like the 90s, early mid 2000s, because he's an old school Pirates fan, and he for a long time, probably still does today. He said, if Derek Jeter makes the Hall of Fame, it's only going to be because he plays for a million years. To which I'm going to go the Michael Kay route and say, okay, so why should he be punished for being durable to play long enough?
Yeah.
Like, why is – okay, it's not like he played for 20 years and was good for, let's say, 10 of them, and then the last 10, he just kind of bounced around, like, was just competitive enough. No, up until the last 2-3 years of his career, Derek Jeter played at a very high level.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Look at his the season where he hit, where I was reading some old articles I wrote about him back in last year in the lead up to him getting into Cooperstown, and his 3,000 hit game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was having a very modest season going into that game, but then not only does he have 5 hits in that game, from that game on up through the rest of the season, and this was in July, he hit .338.
Yeah,
and he was 38 at that point.
Yeah, I mean. It's weird how people try to knock down his legacy because he wasn't as prolific as like an A-Rod type hitter or
right.
like my one thing I that drives me insane is like, if he was playing in, like, you know, if he had been drafted by Cincinnati, would he be Derek Jeter as we remember him today? And it's like, well, that doesn't matter, because here, let's play a little game. Derek Jeter, Mike Trout, purely as players and talent, who do you take?
Between the two of them?
Between the two of them.
I'm going to go with Derek Jeter, but here's why.
Okay.
Mike Trout, he's very talented. Mm-hmm. Five-tool player. I'd argue I don't know if he's the best player in baseball anymore, but he's still definitely a top five to top 10 player.
Yeah.
But one thing Mike Trout doesn't have that Derek Jeter has, and we saw this in episode one, was that drive to win, that killer instinct. Mike Trout's there to play baseball. Derek Jeter is there to win.
Well,
to compete.
And that's going to lead me to my next point. Like, I think in a vacuum, if you take a look at the two players, like, I would probably say Mike Trout, right? Just and just the way they are, the way they are as players. But now let's take the Derek Jeter we know and the Mike Trout that we know. Who has had a bigger impact?
Jeter, and it's not even close.
Exactly. So like, why are we blaming him for being drafted by the Yankees and being on the Yankees for 20 plus years when it's like, oh, if he was on a different team, he'd be a nobody. Mike Trout hasn't done anything in his career. He's not a nobody, but he definitely doesn't have as big of an impact as Jeter.
Like, at the end of the day, and now granted, like, he's probably going to hit a lot more milestones than this guy, but I look at Mike Trout and I think we're going to look back at him and reminisce about him more like we do, like, an Andre Dawson type or Frank Thomas, someone who, yeah, was really good play and was the best their position for a time. But in terms of their overarching legacy, they're going to wind up being looked at as really, really, really good as opposed to an all-time great.
Yeah. It depends, I think, on, like, durability. Like you said, like, Jeter's in the Hall of Fame because he played however long. It's like, yeah, but the best ability is availability or durability.
And not just that. You talk about how Mike Trout, we've talked about how Mike Trout can't hit a high pitch, can't hit an inside pitch.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter, by comparison, yeah, he didn't have a lot of power, but he was like me when I was a high school ball player. He like had this tenacity in the box where, while he didn't necessarily light up the box score a way that an A-Rod would, or that a Ken Griffey Jr. would, or a Greg Vaughn, any of those power hitting contemporaries, he was going to find a way to get on base.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he was like almost like Ichiro before Ichiro.
Yeah, I mean, and you hear, like, you know, there's that famous quote that A-Rod said that caused the falling out, where it's like opposing pitchers don't circle Jeter's name in the lineup when you got a team of, like, the Tino Martinez's, the Bernies, and the Paul O'Neills and stuff. And you know what? Like, that's always fascinated me, because I think you look at the bulk of Jeter's career, especially during that dynasty, it's like he was both a tone setter and a role player in that lineup.
Yeah, because I remember just from the 96 season that we're really throwing it back here. I remember some days he batted leadoff or second. And then for a couple of games, he batted ninth.
Yeah.
And then still somehow won the American League Rookie of the Year. Now, granted, like, over the course of those prime years, those prime core 4 years, we saw him bat at the top of the lineup a lot more often. But you're absolutely right that he was more of a role player, just to sort of get himself on base or just advance runners so that your guy, Paul O'Neill, could come up and get that hit.
Exactly.
Or
and then
Williams.
And then he transitioned into the guy who was getting the hit. And he might not have been getting it often as some of the great contemporary power hitters he had, but I mean, like, you think about what he did in the 2000 World Series, you think about what he did in the 2001 World Series, like, the dude ended up becoming as clutch as anyone. But
well,
he was
I don't think it was necessarily that he became the one getting the hit. He always had that clutch gene that
yeah
we talk about all so yeah often. But I think that over the course of his career, you mentioned tone setter and role player. I think as his career wore on, he became less of that role player and more of that tone setter. Like, just look at him being named the captain.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think you hear David Cone talk about it a lot too. It's just like how he becomes that guy in the locker room. And I'm like, I hate how people can't have any nuance nowadays and can't be like, hey, was Jeter the best of all time? No, probably not. Was he really, really freaking good? Yeah, he was. And he deserves the attention that he got. He deserves the accolades and the praise. It doesn't have to be like, oh, he's an overrated, you know, shitty ball player. It's like, because he's not.
This documentary alone, man, I swear, I'm about to become like the... You're probably in this boat with me too, but I'm about to become the most obnoxious Derek Jeter fan. I'm just gonna like blindly defend him. Oh, like all these gold gloves, but actually terrible fielder. Yeah, whatever. He still has it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You can't take those away.
Yeah, like, nope. He's a gold glover. You can't take it away from him.
It's the same thing. It's like when everyone's like, oh, Babe Ruth could never touch pitching in today's game. Yeah, no shit, he couldn't. That doesn't mean he sucks.
Didn't Babe Ruth also use like a 40-ounce bat?
Dude used like a log, it was like a mix of lumberjack. Seriously, but it's backtracking quickly about when we were having the conversation about Yankees prospects, and I was looking at Jeter's first year. I see people on like Twitter talking mad shit about Jason Dominguez and how he's like a bust, or like Volpe's a bust. And it's like, and I get some of it's like just fans of rival teams just kind of willingly baiting and trolling Yankee fans. But it's just like, we have this impatience of these kids who are away from home for the first time, who are navigating not just a professional athlete's life, but just being an adult. And it's just like, guys, everyone needs to chill. Everyone needs a chill. Yeah, that's a bit of a tangent. But that was a thought that occurred to me.
No worries. But how about some of the guys that got to be interviewed
for it.
Just in the first episode, like we had Cone. Yeah, we saw Joel Sherman.
We saw Pettit. We saw Mattingly. We saw
Tino.
We saw
Posada.
Showalter.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to say, like, I'm starting to really like Buck Showalter. Like,
Buck's always been a great guy.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, his role in New York was before my time, and the bulk of my like vision of him is on really struggling Baltimore teams.
Yeah.
So, and he always seemed like a bit of a curmudgeon to me, because I just remember him getting in heated, you know, arguments with umpires and getting ejected. So when I, you know, he's had a nice career revival with the Mets this year. But I guess I never really appreciated how much of a baseball mind he has.
Can I tell you a really funny Showalter story real quick?
Yeah.
So 95, the Yankees are playing the Angels in this home game. Chuck Finley's on the mound, who just, oh God, in the 90s, you're a little young to remember, but there was a time, and you saw some of this in the early aughts too, but I swear, man, mid-late 90s, there was something about the Angels. The Yankees could not touch them.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Angels would be like a non-playoff team, and they would just give the Yankees fits. And Chuck Finley, who was not a bad pitcher, but not a great pitcher, I think by today's standards, he'd be maybe like a high-end two, or like a low to mid-end two. This guy would come pitch against the Yankees, and he'd look like Roger Clemens. And this one game, he's just shutting the Yankees down. He's hitting all his pitches. He's doing well in the field. And on one ground out, O'Neill thought that he beat it out. He like slammed the helmet, got kicked out of the game. And Buck's out there defending him. Like, what's going on? And Buck got ejected, but the umpire, instead of doing the whole like, you're out, they're just kind of wagging his finger like, you're out. and Buck just stood there like stunned. Like, oh, that was the most like subtle passive aggressive ejection ever. He just kind of walked off the field.
How about that clip of Jeter in the minor leagues getting in the umpire's face?
I was like, hello. Well, that's I think in a weird way, Alec, that's what I appreciated most about this episode, is that it really does peel back the layer of the usually stoic Jeter who we saw, who, like, I remember watching interviews with him as a player. He got more stoic as time wore on, got more quiet in his old age. But even before that, I remember one interview he did where he smiled, and it was with Keith Olbermann for Fox, and the Yankees were in the midst of another great season, fresh off, I think, 98. So maybe he was just in a good mood. Mm-hmm. But to hear, like, yeah, failing in the minors and making 56 errors, that sucked. I went home and cried every night. I called my parents, asked about returning the signing bonus.
Yeah.
Even just hearing about how his family had to deal with that sort of casual backhanded Midwestern racism growing up in Michigan, just because they're a mixed race family.
Yeah.
I guess, go ahead. You were saying?
No. Like, I think we are going to see a whole different dynamic to, you know, the figure that is Derek Jeter. And he's going to be humanized to an extent that I don't think a lot of baseball fans outside of New York, and probably even inside New York, could give credit to. Like, you know, at the end of the day, this is a dude who has gone through stuff that we can't even imagine. And to come out with grace and be as successful as he is, like, man, like, and we always hear about his parents all the time. It's like, it kind of feels like, you know, they're everyone. Like, if you're a Yankee fan and a Jeter fan, you feel like his parents are kind of your parents by extension too. And everything that, like, you know, the successes and failures that they go through, like, you feel for them. And, you know, that's the stuff I'm definitely most interested in, the behind the scenes, like,
and just seeing the footage of the now late, rest in peace, Gerald Williams, talking about his best friend.
Yeah,
it was clear, like, you could see with him being interviewed, he's not doing well. Like, he's probably like getting close to the end, but just seeing him maintain that positivity and just talking about his friends, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, what do you want to see most from the rest of the series? Because, like, we're recording this Wednesday night. Episode 2 airs tomorrow night.
Oh, it is tomorrow. Okay.
9 p.m. on ESPN.
Oh, man. Yeah, like, I don't think there's anything specific that I want to see. I mean, like, the baseball fan and student of the game in me would love to hear more of the technical stuff.
Sure.
Just like what he did to prepare himself mentally, physically, all that stuff. Cause I think that, like, going back to, like, the All-Star game last night, like, how cool was that when you got to hear Jose Trevino and Nestor Cortez
work, that was dope.
Like, mentally work their way through an at bat. Like, you know, I would love to hear, like, his thoughts, his approach in certain at bats in certain situations. Like, you know, like, what did he do? That leadoff home run he hit in, game 5 of the 2000 World Series?
Subway Series was the leadoff home run, I think.
Yeah.
It was 4 or 5.
Yeah. Like, how, you know? It's not, you know, it's like, what was the game plan going into that? Like, were you telling yourself, hey, we got to get on them early, I'm going to be aggressive here, because we saw, like, Jeter swinging first pitch and going yard. So stuff like that would be really cool. I'm like, other than that, it's just like, I would love to hear more of the personal side, like, just how he navigated that fine line.
I want to hear the real story when it comes to A-Rod.
Yeah.
Because you were probably mildly aware of this just because you were so young, but I remember a story, I think it was Sports Illustrated, about how Jeter, A-Rod, and Nomar Garciaparra, by extension, all three of them were so close and, like, such good mm-hmm. friends that whenever, like, one guy's team was in the other city, they'd stay in each other's apartments.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, I'm like, I remember growing up and them being the three
mm-hmm.
idols. Like,
yeah.
Like, I, you know, regardless of, you know, Nomar on the Sox or Alex on Seattle and then Texas, like, though, like, for me as a kid, those were the three main guys everyone at my age was, like, hyper focused on.
It's gonna be interesting to see how Garciaparra fits into that A-Rod episode, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, A-Rod's gonna have his side of the story, Jeter's gonna have his side, and then hopefully Randy Wilkins, who's already a phenomenal filmmaker, will help guide the viewers towards that spot in the middle where the actual true story is.
Because
you know, A-Rod, look, love the guy as a player. The more I see him as a broadcaster, media guy, and I'm saying this as someone who's followed him on Instagram for years, will continue to follow him on Instagram, the man's narcissism knows no bounds.
Yeah. I think the issue with his narcissism is it's ever evolving. It was the narcissism as a player. He had his comeuppance. He took responsibility, and he did a very good job of rehabilitating his image, I thought, after the whole, you know, suspension and whatnot.
Yeah.
When he first became a broadcaster, his insight was awesome. You could tell he was very knowledgeable. I loved listening to him in the beginning, but now he realizes that he's really good at it. Yeah. And it's become insufferable.
Yeah, he's gotten complacent almost.
Yeah.
And it's tough because, like, I'm a creative, you're a creative, Derek Jeter's a creative in his own way, same with Alex Rodriguez. You need to allow yourself a certain amount of narcissism.
Yeah.
If this is like the path you're going to pursue in life. I mean, Bill Murray, when talking about Chevy Chase and his time on Saturday Night Live and their fraught relationship, he said, like, when you get famous, you have exactly 1 year to be an asshole and get away with it. He says you have 1 year to be an asshole because, like, that you have money for the first time in your life. Everyone knows who you are. You have 1 year where you can enjoy it. And then from that point on, it just, if you don't, like, find a way to strike that balance, that yeah. is very hard sometimes, like, it gets very tough, then you're done. You just yeah. are. And A-Rod, the problem was he got good and at the same time became very famous very fast at a very young age. And then came that record-setting contract. He never really, you could say he probably never really learned how to hold himself accountable.
Yeah.
Whereas Derek Jeter, his parents drilled in accountability and that tough work ethic from the get-go.
Yeah. I mean, like, A-Rod didn't have a father figure.
Did he not?
No, his dad, like, dipped out on him when he was young.
Oh.
And he attributes a lot of that to his issues.
All right, well, at least he's aware of it.
Yeah. No, well, and that's the thing. It's like, A-Rod was one of my favorite players. Just, sure. Like, his swing is one of the greatest swings of all time. And I could watch it for days. But, yeah, he has this weird self-awareness, and he has stopped with the finger pointing, and he takes the responsibility when he needs to. But then there's just like, yeah, there's moments where the ego starts to come back out a little bit. And it's like, it's a weird balance.
And you have to assume that since he agreed to be interviewed for this documentary, he and Jeter have probably patched things up at least to a certain degree. I think now they can at least be in the same room with each other and like catch up. I mean, it's not going to be like Posada, who's always going over to Jeter's house and getting clonked in the head by Jeter's kids.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like, I honestly think that they probably got to that point at the end of their playing days together.
Yeah.
That relationship, what it used to be, I think is definitely gone and will never be repaired, because I think that's just how Derek is. I remember reading stuff about that. Like, he's a guy who's really big on loyalty, and you know,
what's the quote we had in the trailer, like, one-way loyalty isn't loyalty, it's stupidity.
It might be that. I can't remember what it was.
It's something along those lines, but we'll definitely see it. But yeah, like, I'm real excited to see the rest of the series. Excited to see A-Rod, the tabloids, just all the Tory years.
Yeah.
We'll close on this because I hopefully want to run a last minute errand tonight if I can. The 2009 World Series, I really want to see something about that, just because I have thought that the 2009 team specifically, with how much money was spent, was designed, okay, we are going all in and we are going to win the World Series this year, just so Jeter and the guys have one last run at it. Anything we win after this, while Jeter's still playing, that's a bonus. 2009, mm-hmm. though, that this is a championship year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'll be interesting to see how they play that off.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, thanks for catching this impromptu episode of Bleacher Creatures, discussing the captain. We'll be back next week to discuss the start of the second half, maybe some trade deadline stuff, and also more captain talk. I'll probably hop on solo tomorrow night after episode 2 to give an instant reaction. You can find me on Twitter at JoshBESNY, and oh crap, I always forget yours.
Alec_Monte Calvo.
There you go. All right. Thanks for listening, folks. And we'll see you next time.